What sort of future do you think we're heading for? How will we live as we slip into the 21st century?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Forecast. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Scott Johnson.
And this is the show where we trick a couple of people into joining us to sit down, drink some things, and predict the future. I'm having a little decaf coffee today, Scott.
Really? Because last time you had something alcoholic. Tonight I have orange juice again. Third time's the charm. This is all I drink. I think orange juice is my favorite thing in the world, and that's what I've got.
We're going to have a little talk about this, because I think you've been hitting the OJ a little hard.
I know. I'm trying to fend
Usually
off whatever.
Usually that sentence is said the other way around. But
Indeed.
Yeah.
But you know, Tom, you said it kind of at the top of the show. We have a really, really great show this week. I'm very, very excited about it.
Did I say that?
I feel like we're among peers this week, and so can I go ahead and introduce the folks that are with us?
Yes, get on. Don't keep them waiting.
First up at the plate is the Demon Lord of the Totally Rad Show, actor and the buff one of TRS. Nobody look no further than Jeff Cannata of the Totally Rad Show. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Oh man, it's an absolute pleasure to be here, guys. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, thanks. We think that you probably got some predictions that we will not be able to predict, and that's what we look for in a. A solid.
Yeah, yes. It's going to be interesting to see what I say.
All right. Also with us is one of the leaders in the web cartooning world, the creator of PvP, and the master over all he sees, Mr. Scott Kurtz. Scott, welcome.
Thank you. I'm excited, and I predict we're going to have a lot of fun tonight.
I think we
am
will.
Am I right? Am I right, guys?
Am I right?
Am I right, people?
Amen.
I'm really excited that Scott's here because...
Which one?
You know, well, both. Both of them. We're in the Mutual Admiration Society.
Oh, we totally are.
We've contacted each other via Twitter and expressed our undying affection several times, which is
very strong.
Yeah, you guys are going to make some kind of weird announcement this episode, a real prediction.
But I tell you what, I realized how much I care about Jeff when I watched the bungee jumping episode of TRS.
Oh, gosh.
Like, despite knowing that if something bad had happened, we would have heard about it by now, when he jumped, I was like, no, Jeff.
What about us? What about our future? Be careful.
Well, have you heard about the theories that Jeff has actually been replaced by a double?
Really?
After that?
Well, yeah. I noticed he wasn't wearing shoes in the Abbey Road album, so yeah. I thought maybe that was a sign. Something.
That's why I only do audio shows now.
Play this episode backwards.
The scarring is really trouble.
He's dead now. Miss him. All right. Normally we would start off here with some email predictions or things off the blog at forecastpodcast.com, but we didn't really get any.
Partially because we didn't ask for too many, did we?
Yeah. I don't know if we made this clear, audience, but you have a job here. You can't just sit back and enjoy the show. Well, yeah, you can. It's absolutely free, and you can do that. But if you want to make predictions, you can send them to us, forecastpodcast@gmail.com, or post on the blog at forecastpodcast.com. We did get one guy who said that Jonathan Colton's guess may be less than 5 years away, as Craig Venter is on the verge of creating synthetic life.
Whoa. Well, we knew when we heard it, it felt like it had meat. So this is good confirmation.
Basically, Jonathan was cribbing from Craig Venter.
Wikipedia is his friend.
Thank you, Joe Larson, for catching him out.
Yeah.
So let's get in. Shall we get right into it?
Let's plow in with both feet exposed, if that's even a phrase.
Mr. Kurtz, Mr. Cannata, are you ready?
Yes.
Are you sitting comfortably?
Uh-huh.
I could use a better chair.
Okay. Well, get a better chair then. We got time.
I should. That's all right. I'm all good. All right. Now I'm good.
We'll start with the short-term predictions. These are predictions of what we think will happen in the next few years. Could be in your area of expertise. Could be just sci-fi stuff you see in the pipeline, whatever. These are a little more practical, though, a little more near-term. Jeff Cannata, let's start with you.
Well, I'm going to start in my wheelhouse a little bit, which is sort of video games. And I am also going to crib from somebody else. this is an idea that I don't know if it actually will.
At the time.
Yeah. There'll be a lot of that tonight. I don't know if this will happen, but I kind of think it should happen. And that is the one console future. I don't know if you guys have heard talk about that. Dennis Dyack of Silicon Knights is a big proponent of this idea. And it's basically the idea that we have these consoles from Microsoft, and we have Sony console, and we have a Nintendo console, and none of them are compatible. And that's kind of dumb. It basically would be like if, you know, you bought home a DVD player and it only played DVDs from MGM.
Right.
You know?
So you think that we need to unify, games need to be unified in the way that films were, and do you maybe see the console wars as they continue and happen every 5 years? Do you equate that with kind of the DVD wars that happen and someone won and then everyone said, well, okay, let's stick with the standard and it won't be another 10 years until there's another fight over a new digital standard, whatever that is, and then it kind of simmers down to one again? You think that should happen in games?
I think it serves both the consumer and the game designers themselves to have a unified, agreed-upon standard that maybe some consortium comes together and comes up with, and they can concentrate on creating middleware that differentiates itself from its peers, but they can stop worrying about, you know, every time a new console comes out, there is this period of kind of crappy games where everybody's trying to figure out how to program for that console, and we have, in the latest cycle, so many games that are multi-platform anyway, it causes a lot of extra development time for these teams to port things between incompatible systems. Why not create a standard, and then you can have multiple companies creating competing products that all adhere to that standard but offer them at lower prices or with better bundles, so that you still have that competition in the marketplace, but I don't have to worry about buying an Xbox 360 and not being able to play Uncharted 2.
I think everybody thought that was going to happen in the 90s, right? We kind of got away from Atari and TI-99 and Commodore 64, and it was Windows on the x86 platform, and that's where gaming was going to go to. And then consoles never faded away. They sort of were minimized for a while, and then all of a sudden it was Xbox, PlayStation, and everything started going back into the console. So what is it? Why? Because we had that platform, right? We had the PC, but what was it about the PC that didn't work for that? How do we get around that?
See, well, I'm ironically about that, but
No, absolutely. Go ahead.
Well, it's interesting because I don't know if this theory is created through observation or just by my age. Because I know what happened to me with PC gaming is I got tired of the dance where every time a new game comes out, I've got to rebuild my PC to play it the way it was intended to be played, yeah. And then pretty soon it's like, oh, this is just this horrible dance where there's a new game and then I got to re-up my motherboard and then new video card, new processor, new game, where the console's the same for, you know, 5 years, and the game comes out and either it works and you play it or it doesn't work and you take it back to the store and say, this didn't work, give me another CD. And all there is to do is play the game.
Yeah,
so
I agree with that.
I think it's the same problem. I think you're talking about the same problem in both cases, in the sense that there's no standard. There was no standard for PC games. It was catch as catch can, and I remember spending hours editing my config sys and auto exec bat files to try to get DOS games to work.
Yeah, Wing Commander to work.
Dude.
Yeah.
The standard was too low. It's like the standard is runs on Windows.
Yeah.
You know, or DOS, and that's not enough. You're right. That's why consoles were attractive. It's like, oh, well, I don't have to think about that. But then that's bad for the developers because then they got multi-platforms.
Well, and the consoles now enjoy the connectivity and all the other advantages that the PC stuff sort of had. But the reason I have a problem with this prediction is, A, I love it because this is what I want. But B, I don't know how this happens because what you've got is, if who comes together for the standard? Do all the publishers do it? Do they all build arms into their companies that are part of some kind of coagulated R&D department, and they all kind of work together to come up with one standard? And does that one standard end up not being truly innovative if Sony ran off and did their own thing with a PS4, or Microsoft had some crazy thing up their butt with the new Xbox or whatever? Maybe up their butt was the wrong phrase, but anyway. That all of that coming together seems tricky. Like DVD standards are like, all right, this new high def standard, HD DVD versus Blu-ray. You get basically the same experience with these two things. It is all just a battle of one-upsmanship until somebody wins, and then everyone sticks with that format. I don't know how that doesn't happen in the games, and because there's so many players, at least three major and many, many minor players, and a lot of influential publishers and developers, I don't know how those guys ever come together and say, here's our one thing.
Well, you make a great point. And, of course, the devil's advocate to my own position is that if there had been some sort of standard that was established prior to this console generation, there would have been no reason for Nintendo to come out with the Wii, which really completely changed the playing field for everybody, and now Microsoft and Sony are both playing catch-up trying to come up with some new input device. And so that is an innovation that probably wouldn't have happened if you had had one kind of console that just came out with a standard twin stick controller. So there are drawbacks, but I think ultimately, and I don't see a clear path to it happening, but I do think that if it did happen, if somehow there was a meeting of the minds between Sony and Microsoft and Nintendo and a lot of other people, and they came up with a very aggressive standard that kind of could please everybody, which is a very difficult task, but I think it would be beneficial to everyone. As a consumer, I would feel there wouldn't be this "which console do I buy?" and "oh man, I'm worried about it becoming the Dreamcast and disappearing." And you know,
I think it's going to come from the companies that make the games that are almost as big in economic power as some of the companies that make the consoles. I mean, if you look at if you look at Rock Band, like if you go buy Beatles Rock Band, you know, the bundle, it's as much as an Xbox. You're paying $239 for the whole experience.
Yep.
So, you know, and Electronic Arts, Harmonix, these guys, Blizzard, they're in a position to release things in that sense, release an experience as opposed to a game. I don't think it would be too difficult for Electronic Arts or Blizzard to release something akin to the Rock Band experience, where the whole thing was in the bundle you bought. You didn't need an Xbox or a PlayStation.
Hmm. Yeah. Now, I wonder if there's some sort of open source hardware project that the developers could get behind and sort of foist it on
the
you
Phantom.
That way, where you're just
the
like
Phantom.
They designed the standard, right? And it's, you know, and it's there, and anybody can build it and run the middleware, and they're going to design games that go to that. It's a little bit of a chicken egg thing, though.
And maybe that OnLive thing is the answer. Maybe that is the thing, or that's the path just talking
too,
about.
Right. Well, look, this is going to happen eventually, right? Because if you think about the games you're playing on your iPhones now, those are the games that used to be on like Super Nintendos, where you spent $300 and waited 5 years for that console to come out so you could play those games. Now you're downloading them over a 3G connection. So eventually, the technology is going to get to the point where you don't need to invest all this money in a giant console to play it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, great prediction. Let us move on over.
That's
to...
good. That's strong. You didn't need to be afraid of that, Jeff.
Right out of the gate.
You guys haven't heard my second two yet.
Can't wait, Mr. Scott Kurtz. What do you think for your short-term prediction?
Well, I would like to talk from my neck of the woods, from my wheelhouse, so to speak, and discuss something that's been kind of being bandied about back and forth in the webcomics community, which is the future of print and newspapers, which is where most people got their comic strips for the longest time, and now they're just kind of getting them everywhere else. And I think a lot of people are predicting the death of newspapers in 5 to 10 years. And I was talking to a friend of mine about it over lunch the other day, and we were solving the world's problems over lunch. And I think that my prediction is the next 5 to 10 years, newspapers won't die, but the idea of traditional journalism will die. And once the newspapers can let go of that, then they'll be able to rejuvenate themselves. Because we were discussing it, and the idea that journalism is this wonderful and noble and empowering profession where the truth is always sought has already kind of gone out the window. It's kind of a bunch of BS. I mean, you guys do a lot of news reporting yourselves. I'm sure some of you have been interviewed by people about what it is you do on the net. And how many times do you go back and read those interviews and those reporters didn't get
happy? Dude, the local paper here in Salt Lake City did something on me about, I don't know, 3 months ago. It was terrible.
Yeah.
Horrible. It was not fact-checked. And I mean just basic stuff like I told her how to spell my name right and she got a little bit of it wrong. And how do you spell Scott Johnson wrong? I mean, honestly, people. And there was all kinds of weird stuff like that. Like I'd say things like, yeah, Twitter's a great tool for communicating with your reader base. And what they said about Twitter was not even remotely accurate to the technology, let alone what I do with it. So I'm with you there. I totally get it.
So if you're running a newspaper, Skyler, if you were putting a newspaper together and someone came to you and said, "Hey, we need an article on video games," what would be better? Taking one of your staff reporters and saying, "Go hunt down this picture of this article about video games," or just paying the Penny Arcade guys to write an article about video games? What's going to be more accurate? You know, why not go to the people that know it, the bloggers that know it already?
Oh yeah,
and have them contribute an article for you.
So I see what you're saying. Going with a larger aggregate of people who really know their stuff. And
newspapers can still determine their content, but rather than send staff reporters out to investigate this or do really bad reporting on it, they're just going to go. I mean, just going to go to bloggers. They're just going to aggregate all this content from the experts that already are out in the field that know what the heck they're talking about. And if they can let go of that ideal of we are this journalistic institution and we have these standards that they've already thrown out the window years ago, they can start taking some of the stuff that we're looking for online already.
I know this isn't what you're saying, but it sounds like you're saying if they would just get rid of having standards.
I'd be happier.
Yeah.
If they'd stop pretending they had standards.
Standards are fluid, though, right? Standards aren't, you know,
get this clear. Standards in journalism are new. Up until the 50s, journalism was about yellow journalism. It was about digging up dirt on the opponent. It was about like creating wars. So, like the Spanish-American War was almost entirely created by the Hearst Empire to sell papers. And you know, I mean, that's over exaggerating it a little bit, but not by much. The journalism only in the 50s decided, hey, you know what? We need to think about objectivity. We need to think about having standards. We need to think about having journalistic ethics. And that's when you started to get this idea of the journalism as an ivory tower, as sort of being above it all. It had existed before, but it wasn't until then that it really got codified and they came out with a bunch of papers getting together and having journalistic ethics documents that they could look at.
Yeah.
And we've always had tabloids even since then. So the sort of pretense that journalism has always existed as this pure enterprise, this pure endeavor that is now suddenly being sullied by the internet is laughable.
Well, it's also laughable because, you know, I'll use the Penny Arcade thing that Scott said. People go to Penny Arcade, many of them go because the comic's awesome, but they also go there because they want to hear what Tycho or Gabe are saying about games they're playing. And they take it really seriously. And PAX is a very serious event about serious gamers. And all of that stuff is a standard. In other words, the standards happen in a very different way, not like it did for my grandpa, who was worried about what was in the Sunday evening, you know, paper or whatever. It happens in a totally different way now, and I am all for Scott's future. That's a future I can sink my teeth into, and it's a future where the papers can survive.
Here's my problem with this, and that is it sounds great for the video game article I want to read or all the stuff that I want to seek out, but what about the stuff that I don't really want to read, but I should?
I know what you're talking about. Like, who's going to cover local news, and who's going to cover this stupid, ridiculous thing that's happening at the courthouse,
or a war, or some kind of or weird genocide?
Who's going to pay those people, and who's going to decide who the experts are in those fields?
Yeah, that's tricky.
Yeah. Well, I didn't crap over your prediction, Kanata.
No, I mean, I don't.
Well, no, and that's exactly the thing that the newspapers are all saying is if you let us die, if you steal our content, we're not going to be able to do this. And the fact is they haven't been doing the local stuff very well at all for a long time. And I don't think journalism, the practice of journalism, is going to die. I think what you end up with is those people who want to go and cover things overseas or cover City Hall will be able to do it. And there will always be people who want to do those things and become experts. And maybe this network that Scott Kurtz is describing is the way to go, where it's, you know, people are like, hey, I'm a stringer and my passion is covering City Hall, or my passion is turning up stories on corruption, or my passion is covering wars.
And that sounds really boring to us, man, but there are people out there that, like, that is exciting to them. I mean, my dad and I used to joke that any topic you can come up with, there's a magazine for it. Like, at the time.
Yeah.
There's a magazine for any
topic. Now there's a bankrupt magazine for it.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, like, with articles and ads, and there's industries built around it, and people are passionate about it. The most ridiculously mundane, boring thing. And there are people out there, I'm sure now, that are blogging about local politics, and they're very fired up about it. I mean, it has to be vetted. You know, you can't just you know, there's still an editorial staff involved, but I think the costs involved are more manageable.
Yeah. Well, and I know our neighborhood has a blog.
You have a neighborhood blog? Really?
Yeah, yeah. The Grand Lake neighborhood here in Oakland. There's a blog. It's called the Grand Lake Tribune, and it's one guy and a few people in the neighborhood he knows, and he gets people to write for him, and, you know, they try to cover the, you know, city action council and how it's going to affect the neighborhood and all that stuff.
I'm in a neighborhood where everyone thinks Scott's weird because he knows what a blog is. It's true.
So I guess in a grander sense, what you're kind of talking about is the Huffington Post, right?
In a way, yeah.
You know, editorial oversight of a bunch of loosely affiliated freelance writers.
Sure. Yeah. Or the Daily Beast is another good example.
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard of the Daily Beast, but sure.
You're going to go ahead and trust that source.
I've barely heard of the Huffington Post. I draw fart comics.
Yeah, your fart jokes are good.
People who have a passion for that, and we need fart jokes.
That's right. Video games.
And with that, we're going to take a break. That ends part one of this edition of Forecast with Jeff Cannata and Scott Kurtz. We have their long-term predictions and their crazy-ass predictions, as well as four questions coming up in future episodes. So tune in next week. Thanks for listening, everybody. ForecastPodcast.com is our website, and ForecastPodcast@gmail.com is our email. See you next time.
But it's only 32 years away.